As we were singing Waymaker, I had a message that kind of crossed my mind. And it's funny because this particular message is something that has crossed my mind for weeks, maybe months now. And it was really prayerfully thinking, Lord, how strategically, when do I want to preach this particular message? It's one that I've preached a number of times through the years, and I have because it's so relevant to where we are. And as we were singing Waymaker, this message crossed my mind, and I think I'm supposed to share it now. And so in the first 9 a.m. service, I preached the next message in Giving God's Way, and that's what's on your notes, and that's kind of what everything's prepared for. And so I don't know, for those of you who weren't in the 9 a.m. service, I guess we could come in tomorrow and record that message maybe, so we'd have, for those who didn't, because we don't record the 9 a.m. service, right? Is that, well, Pastor Todd and I'll come and I'll preach to an empty, I mean, that seems weird, but just so you can have access to today's message for Giving God's Way. As we have some other things scheduled ahead, I preached it in the first service, and then for those who are in the first service, this one will be recorded, so they'll have that. So audio.
We record
the video. Okay. The first service is recorded on video, so we'll post that one on video tomorrow. So if you want this next message, forget it. It's a really good message. I mean, it's really good. Turn to your Bibles in Jonah. Jonah chapter 2. And when you get there, your tablets, your smartphones... I almost never do this because we really seek the Lord in prayer about kind of the messages He's prepared and the schedule and the planning and the preparation. So this almost never happens. I think in 14 years at my previous church, this happened to me maybe one time. So I don't, it's just not very often. But during the song Waymaker, this particular passage, and even as we were praying, I just sense there's some folks here who will be able to get something from this message. So Jonah was a preacher. Jonah was a prophet. He was called by God to go preach to a group of people who he hated. they were the Ninevites. And so Jonah was called to go preach to them. You say, well, why did he hate them? Well, he hated them because they were Ninevites. You know, we still have that in our culture today. People we hate or dislike just because of who they are. Just because of the color of their skin, just because of their economic level, just because of where they've come from. And so now Jonah, don't get me wrong, he hated them because the Ninevites were part of an empire that had been particularly cruel to Jonah's ancestors. And so they had been cruel, and he was taught to hate them because they were Ninevites. And so he still did, and when God called him to preach to them, Jonah had a lot of faith in God's word, and so he knew that if he preached to them, they would get saved. And so he did not want that. So you can imagine that. It's not that you don't want to be around them. It's that, you know, if I preach to them, they're going to start getting saved, and I don't want them to get saved. I want them to go to hell. So that's kind of Jonah's idea. And so Jonah ran, and you know the story. Jonah ran as far away from God as he knew to run geographically, jumped on a boat, and took off across the Mediterranean Sea. And while he was on the boat, a storm came up, and all the sailors on the boat were pagans. They were not believers in God. And he was kind of down below doing his thing, and the storm was about to sink the boat, and they came to Jonah and they said, look, dude, I don't know if this storm's come because of you or not, but you need to go pray, do something. Maybe it'll help. And Jonah said, no, I know it's my fault. And so what y'all need to do is throw me over the boat. I always noticed that Jonah did not volunteer to jump off the boat, but he said, you need to throw me off the boat. And so they would not do that at first. They kept throwing stuff off the boat, trying to think maybe they could get out of this. And finally they determined, we don't have any other option but to throw this guy off the ship. And so you've probably at least heard of this story. Maybe you know it very well. They threw Jonah off the boat. The storm calmed down. Funny story, the sailors ended up getting saved. I mean, they ended up beginning to worship God. So in the midst of all of it, God turned some to him and Jonah went down in the water. When I was 9 years old, I lived in southern Indiana, and we went out to this area called Dean's Lake. And it was a swimming lake, and there was a beach, and you had to pay admission, you know, to get in, and there was a big dock out in the middle of the lake where you could swim out to it, and there was a high dive. And so we liked to swim out there, jump off the diving board for a while, and swim back in. I was 9 years old, and I went out there with a friend of mine, and we jumped off the diving board for a while. And usually what we would do is after we would jump off the diving board for a while, we would rest just a few moments on the dock, and then swim back in. Well, this time, we just jumped off the diving board and started swimming in, not really thinking of the fact that we were both very tired. And about halfway in, I started going under. And we were with some family friends, and one of my older friends was about 4 years older than me. He's about 13 years old. Noticed that, and his mom noticed that. Me and my friend both were going under, and he swam out to get us. And I'll never forget this, even to this day. I remember going under and thinking, I'm not going to make it to where I can stand up. At 9 years old, I still remember that. Have any of you ever been in a situation where you thought you were going to drown? And you'll never forget that, will you? You'll never forget it. I haven't. I was 9 years old. So anyway, so Jonah goes under the water, and he, for all practical purposes, thinks he is about to drown. And funny thing, God sends a fish. We don't know what kind of fish it was. It doesn't say it was a whale. I know oftentimes we say Jonah in the whale. We don't really know, but it was a large fish. It could have been a whale. That's a large enough fish, certainly to do what this fish did to Jonah, but we don't know. It was a very large fish, and the fish came and swallowed Jonah. And here's the funny thing. Oftentimes when I ask people, say, what do you think when you hear Jonah getting swallowed by the fish, and oftentimes what I hear is people say, well, that's God disciplining, punishing Jonah for disobeying him, swallowing him in the fish. And I want to contend to you this. When Jonah was swallowed by the fish, and here's what we'll see, it actually saved his life. So the fish wasn't punishment, the fish was salvation. Now watch this. We look at that and we say, Jonah disobeyed God. God punished him with the fish. And yet when we read it, we go, no, actually, God saved him with the fish. So I got a question for you. This is the question on the floor for the message. You ready? What is your fish? I mean, right now. What is that thing in your life that you think is killing you? And actually, God's going to use it to save you. What is that thing in your life right now you think is about to crush you? You think is about to smother you? What is that thing in your life right now that you think this thing is going to pull me under? And actually, God's not using it to punish you. God's not using it to kill you. God's using it to save you. What is your fish? Jonah chapter 2, we pick up when Jonah is inside the fish. He is inside the fish, and for the first time in his book, named after him, he starts to pray. Jonah chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God, from the fish's belly. And he said, I cried out to the Lord because of my affliction, and he heard me. Now notice verse 2. Is this in the present or past tense? Past tense. And so Jonah is inside the fish. Now watch this. Jonah is inside the fish, but he's thinking back to pre-inside the fish. He's thinking back to his experience just before going inside the fish. And so he says, I cried out to the Lord. So apparently he's under the water, right? And he's thinking back to when he kind of cried out to the Lord. He probably didn't actually verbalize it, or he would have sucked water in his mouth, but in his mind, he's crying out to the Lord while he's in the water going down. For those of you who raised your hand earlier, you're going to see some imagery here about Jonah being under the water, and you're like, wow, that sounds a lot like what I experienced when I felt like I was going to drown. So I cried out to the Lord because of my affliction, and he answered me, out of the belly of Sheol. Does anybody have a translation that uses a different word than Sheol? Because what does it say? It says hell, but you got to be careful there, because the word Sheol just means kind of the afterworld, the other world. Now, the other world can be paradise or it can be hell, but in this case, Jonah's thinking he's dying. See, that's his image. He said, I cried out of the belly of Sheol. As far as I knew, I was dying. I was about to die. And you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep and into the heart of the seas. That word cast. It literally means to like physically throw. Hurl like a fastball. You hurled me into the sea. For you cast me into the deep. God did this. Wait, I thought the sailors, right? I thought the sailors threw Jonah into the sea. Oh no. Jonah understood. The sailors were merely the instruments God used to throw him in the water. Now, I don't know what's going on in your life right now. And you know what? You think your boss, your employer, your neighbor, your family member, your financial issue, you think that's the thing that's coming against you. And I'm telling you, God's using that thing as an instrument to save you. Jonah says, I acknowledge when I was thrown in the water, the sailors did it. But he's not mad at the sailors. Because he understood they were just simply instruments God was using. Pastor, are you telling me that this difficult thing in my life, God allowed it? I'm not only telling you he allowed it, I'm telling you he caused it. I'm telling you he will bring about something in your life you think is difficult. Oh, not the God I serve. Oh, absolutely the God you serve. Listen, he loves you so much. By any means necessary, he will do what needs to be done to bring you to where he wants you to be. And so Jonah said, look, God cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the floods surrounded me. You get this? He's down in the water. He's drowning. All your billows and your waves passed over me. Then I said, I have been cast out of your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The water surrounded me, even to my soul. He's painting this imagery about what was happening just before being swallowed, right? He thinks he's going to drown. He thinks he's going to die. He thinks that where he is killing him. Weeds were wrapped around my head. Now, I don't... That experience I had at 9 years old where I almost drowned, I didn't have anything grabbing me, but I can only imagine if you get caught up in seaweed or strings or whatever, how horrible that feeling would be. You're being now pulled under by that. I went down to the moorings of the mountains. These first set of verses in Jonah chapter 2, we see a man who says, I was drowning, but is praying inside the fish, right? Right, right? We got that? He's inside the fish praying, thinking about prior to the fish. And Jonah up to this point had not prayed. Right? Jonah up to this point, if you go through Jonah chapter 1, all the way through chapter 1, and all that had happened, he had not prayed. What did it take to get Jonah praying? It took getting him on the verge of death to start praying. And at that moment, God brought a fish and saved him. Can I suggest to you that one of the things God will do in your life is send this fish. Send this thing you think is killing you, but actually is bringing you back to him. See, God's desire isn't to fix your situation, is to bring you to him. And you think my situation has to turn out like X, or my situation has to turn out like Y, or my situation has to turn out like Q, or my situation has to turn out like Z. But God says, no, I don't need any of those. What I want is to bring you back to me. And I'm telling you, sometimes God will send a fish in your life to bring you back to himself. The thing you think is killing you, and actually he's using it to save you. When our oldest, Savannah, was 18 months old, she had some issues going on with her kidneys. And at the time, we were living in Warner Robins, and so we had a scheduled appointment to take her to the medical center in Macon, which kind of like Piedmont is in Columbus, and everybody calls it medical center. It's now Navicent in Macon, but everybody still calls it the medical center. And it seems like the medical center has never stopped construction. In all the years I went there, there's always construction going on at the medical center, always. All the years I pastored there. And so we took Savannah to the medical center for her appointment, and we had to go into this, I'm going to call it an operating room. It wasn't an operating room, but it was where they were going to do the procedure. And I'm just going to say she was 18 months old. She didn't understand it was not a pleasant procedure. And so the double doors we went into, kind of like it looked like an operating room. It wasn't, but it was one of those procedure rooms. I don't know what you call them. A lot of bright lights and a bed and that kind of stuff. And Alyssa and I went in, and down the hallway they were doing construction. Jackhammers and drills and all that kind of good stuff. It was loud. And so we got in there with Savannah, and they said, okay, Mom and Dad, we're going to need you to wait outside. And when they say that, that's generally not going to be an enjoyable experience for your child inside. And so Mom and Dad have to wait outside. And so they do the procedure, and they start it, and we're standing outside the door. You can hear jackhammers and drills and saws, and it's so loud, and above it all, we can hear our 18-month-old daughter screaming at the top of her lungs, right? Anybody ever been there, parents? And so what kept us from busting in the doors and throwing down on people and getting our daughter back? Here's the thing. We knew the thing that Savannah thought was hurting her, because she was 18 months old and she didn't understand, was actually going to help her. It was actually going to rescue her physically. And God's so much like that. He will do these things that when we look at them, we go, holy cow, I think this is going to kill me. And he says, oh no, I'm using it to save you. Folks, what is your fish? What is that thing that's happening in your life right now that you think is killing you? And I'm telling you, it isn't. God's using it to bring you back to himself. Look at verse 6 once again. Jonah says, I went down to the moorings of the mountains. In the second half of verse 6, the earth with its bars closed behind me forever. At that moment, I mean, he's like, I'm dead, right? I'm not going to make it through this. Yet. Right? Yet. You have brought up my life from the pit, O Lord, my God. To my knowledge, that is the first time Jonah speaks the word Lord out of his mouth. The word Lord means king. It means master. It means ruler. If I say to you, Lord, that means I am prepared to follow you. If I say to you, Lord, that means you are in charge of my life. If I say to you, Lord, that means you are in control of where I go, what I do, where I'm headed. There are some who says you cannot say no, Lord. They are contradictory statements, right? If you are Lord, then it's always yes. And for the first time, it would appear that in Jonah's life, or at least in these moments, God's bumping him with his will. That is, here's my will, Jonah. I know you've got yours, but I want to bring you into my will. And so verse 7, when my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer went up to you into your holy temple. Jonah's actually remembering back pre-fish when he was in the water dying, thinking he was drowning, and going down and going, wait, I could turn to God, right? It's like, why didn't you do that when you first went in the water? Well, why do any of us not turn to God first thing? Why do any of us go through this thing after thing after thing, and we kick and we fight and we scream and we cry and we squall, and when we go, you know what, maybe I should just turn to the Lord and ask him. I mean, why didn't Jonah do it in the first place? I don't know. Why do any of us? You know, when I was in the eighth grade, I was 13 years old. The first time I became aware of my need for salvation, 13, in the eighth grade. Do you know I was 18 years old before I actually confessed and repented and turned to Christ and was born again? So, well, Pastor, what about those other 5 or 6 years? I don't know. I can't answer that question. Why would I wait 5 years knowing? Why? Maybe the same reason some of you are waiting. So some of you are waiting. And I'll tell you this. There may be some things going on in your lives. I'm not God, so I can't say. And I would never say to you, this bad thing's happening in your life because you're disobedient. Don't hear me to say that. I'm saying this. I don't know what God's doing. But oftentimes he will do things in our lives we think are hurting us and they're actually saving us. And if you've continued to kind of stiff arm God and say, well, I'm not ready. I'm not prepared. I'm telling you, I don't know what God's doing, but I can guarantee you this. He wants you to be his own. And so Jonah, verse 7 says, my prayer went up to you into your holy temple. God is bumping him with his will. Back years ago, when I was pastoring down in South Georgia, I remember when I first moved down there, our church, you know, had a softball team, the whole deal. And at that time, I was still playing a lot of softball. And we got down there, and I played the first season there. And I remember every time I threw, I had this pain in my stomach. Not a bad pain, but just kind of, it was kind of bothering me. And every time we play, every game we play, and I got to be honest with you, I probably wouldn't have done anything about it except every time I tried to throw, I could feel it. And so finally, I went to an orthopedist there locally, I think it was in Savannah, and he said, you know, you've got some inflammation there in your in the rotator cuff there, and so rotator cuff, and we're just going to give you a shot. I don't even remember what the shot was. I guess it was cortisone or something, but he stuck that. You ever seen those needles that they give those shots with? So I don't mind needles, by the way. Anyway, so he gave me the shot. And you know, that never bothered me again. It never bothered me again. I went on and played, never had any trouble. And I'm wondering, would I have ever had anything done to it if it hadn't continued to bother me? In fact, I want to suggest to you the pain probably would have continued to get worse until I did something about it. And I'm going to suggest to you this is, in some ways, the way God works. He's doing things in our lives that bump us and bump us. And initially, maybe we can kind of ignore it. But the worse it gets, we're getting frustrated. We can't take it. We don't know what to do. And he's saying, no, I'm bumping you with my will. So eventually you'll turn to me because you think it's hurting you. I'm telling you it's saving you. So he's bumping you with his will. Now watch this. Verse 8. Jonah finally gets his mind right. By the way, how many of you know the first place you've got to go to get right is to have your mind right? Right, so he says, verse 8, those who regard worthless idols forsake their own mercy. Jonah said, you know what? I know this truth. How many of you know this was a truth Jonah had known since he was a little boy? I mean, really. Those who regard worthless idols, those who worship false idols are in a bad place. Jonah had known that since he was a little boy. How many of you know sometimes the things we've learned about God since we were little kids, sometimes we wander off from those and we have to be reminded. It's not necessarily so much something new we need to know as something we've known a long time we need to be reminded of. And there's somebody here today. And it wasn't that you need to know some new truth. It's you need to be reminded of something you probably learned a long time ago. And so verse 8, those who regard worthless idols forsake their own mercy. But, watch what he says, but I will sacrifice to you. The word sacrifice here is kind of a synonym for worship. I will offer sacrifices. It's an act of worship. I will worship you. You know what worship is? Worship is us seeing God for who he is. And all that he's done, and simply responding. That's worship. And when you come in on Sunday morning, your singing may or may not be worship. I don't know, your heart. If your singing is a response to God for who he is, it is worship. If your singing is just singing, well, it may not be worship. Your work that you do all week long, Monday through Friday, or Monday through Saturday, whatever it is, can be worship if it's done unto a Lord that you acknowledge for what he's done for you. Your marriage, taking care of your wife, your wives, loving your husband, and all that can be an act of worship if it's done unto the Lord. Your schoolwork can be an act of worship. Oh, you're getting, that's a little exaggerated, Pastor. Really? Worship is kind of a state of mind. And so Jonah says here, again, look at this. But I will sacrifice to you. Whoever thought being swallowed by a fish could be an act of worship, right? But it is. With the voice of thanksgiving, I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. Jonah has come back, right? Verse 10, so the Lord spoke to the fish and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. Now, I'm not saying to you, if I'll say the right things, God will fix this. That's not what I'm saying. God's not so concerned about getting Jonah on dry land. God's concerned about getting Jonah in his will. God's not so concerned about fixing your situation. God's more concerned about sanctifying you. And so here in that first part of the chapter 2, God brought Jonah back to his word. God bumped Jonah with his will. And here in these last couple of verses, we see God breaking Jonah for his worth. That is, for the worth of God. When I finally say, Lord, it is about you. God, you are magnificent. God is about you. Look at what Jonah says at the end. And finally, he gets it. It's not about my situation. It's not about fixing where I am. It's not about doing things like I want them done. Lord, ultimately, it's about me being in your will. What is your fish? What is that thing that you think is swallowing you? And actually, it is saving you. Back in 2003, Alyssa was pregnant, and by June of that year, she was very, very near giving birth. We had our oldest, Savannah, and Andrew, our next child, and she was due somewhere early July, I believe. Last few weeks of June, and I can tell you right now, I don't have all this in exact order, but I remember the general details of it. But I remember those last couple of weeks of June, she began to have some issues. And so we went into the doctor's office one day for the regular sonogram visit. And so where her doctor's office was, the doctor saw patients in an office, and across the street was where the sonograms were done. So when you went just for a sonogram, you usually didn't see the OB. You usually just went in for the sonogram. So if we went in for the sonogram, and the sonographer, I don't know, what do you call them that do the sonogram? Is that right, sonographer? I don't know. Whatever you call them. The lady who did the sonogram said, hold on just a moment. And she left, and she was gone like 10 minutes. And we're going, okay, we're waiting and waiting. And in comes Alyssa's OB. And as soon as she walked in the door, we're like, okay, something's wrong. Because she doesn't come over just for the sonogram. She's across the street seeing patients. And so she checked it. The doctor checked it. The sonogram. And to the best of my recollection, it was something like, listen, we're not finding a heartbeat, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to go home, and I want you to rest. And just try to be as still as you can, and let's kind of see where this goes. We're only just a few weeks out from the due date. So we went home, and several things happened, but the next thing that I remember distinctly was one morning I got up, and Alyssa wasn't in the bed, and I went into the kitchen, and she was in there with her Bible open. And I'll never forget this. I stood in the kitchen, and she said, the Lord told me last night this baby is not going to make it. So she said, but we're going to be okay. And so that we got up to, I think, July the 4th, right? July the 4th, all she could do is kind of lay in bed. And at that point, they still had not verified that the baby was still alive or not. And she was, you know, well into this pregnancy. So we went with her mom over to Hilton Head. Her parents owned a place over there. She said, I can lay on the sofa there as easily as I can lay on the sofa at home. So we went over on a Friday, stayed the night. Saturday, she began to feel really, really bad. We took her to the emergency room in Savannah. And at the emergency room, there was this young lady. She's probably early 20s, new to the emergency room, I'm fairly certain. She brought in the little heartbeat monitor and was checking it. And you could tell the look on her face. She was really kind of upset. And Alyssa says to her, she said, I just want you to know this baby's probably not alive. We know that. And the young lady just kind of froze up as she went and the doctor came in. The doctor took us over to the sonogram machine in the emergency room area, did a full sonogram, and the doctor then began to talk to us about, okay, there's no heartbeat. This baby's not alive. And he began to talk to us about extractions, and we said, no, that's not going to happen. He said, well, you know, we don't really know you'll carry the baby. We don't know really what will happen next. And we're like, well, you're not going to go in and take this baby out. When God wants to come, the baby will come. And I think the doctor was a little bit in shock at how we responded. So that was on a Saturday. We went from the hospital in Savannah back to Hilton Head. I woke up early on Sunday morning, got Savannah and Andrew, and we went to church. From Hilton Head to where I pastored was about an hour, hour and a half. So we just stayed that night and went to church that Sunday morning. Went to Sunday school and left Alyssa with her mom in Hilton Head. Went to Sunday school and finished up Sunday school. Went into my office to put on my microphone and all that kind of good stuff to preach. Getting ready to preach. And my phone rang. And it was Alyssa. And I answered the phone. And she said, listen, I'm at the emergency room. I started bleeding really badly. Just as soon as you can get here, please come on. I said, do I need to come right now? And this is my wife. She said, no, you go ahead and preach. Just as soon as you're done, don't stay around and talk. Come on. So I put the phone down. I just stood there. So I called her mom. Her mom was with her at the hospital. And I said, Cheryl, listen, what's going on? And she said, well, they verified lost the baby. And she seems to be going into labor. And she's in a ton of pain. And I said, do I need to be there? And her mom said, I think her mom would rather me be there than her. And she said, I can tell you this, she'd feel a lot better if you were. Like, that's all I need to know. I took my mic off. I walked out into the hallway. And my youth pastor was coming out from the hallway. I said, James, what did you teach in Sunday school? He said, oh, Galatians 2. I said, you're about to teach it again. I handed the microphone. I grabbed my stuff and I headed out. In fact, I got stopped on my way to the Savannah Hospital doing 105 down the road. And God bless that policeman. I told him what was going on, and he let me go. And got to the hospital, and I don't have to go into a lot of the detail, but she kind of delivered the baby. The baby wasn't alive. And by late, late, late that night, we were leaving the hospital. And as we headed out from Savannah, we headed down the road. I was riding, and I looked at Alyssa, and I said, should we be more upset than we are? And Alyssa looked at me and she said, I'll be honest with you. All the grieving I was going to do, God's already done. And I know that God's got this. And it was this odd feeling, almost like we were outside of ourselves, riding down the road going, this horrible thing has just happened. And we were just at peace. Some of you have had horrible experiences like that in your lives, right? But here's the thing, as we look back on that situation, by the way, a year later, Sarah Elizabeth was born, almost exactly a year later. But we look back on that situation, and I realize that God did some things in our lives through that I don't, some spiritual growth, I can't even begin to explain it, but he did it in some ways I don't know that he could have done it any other way. I'm just saying, not that God was pleased with that or happy, but I'm just saying he did some things in our marriage and in our lives. One, I think where marriage is concerned, some of those trials you go through, that's the glue that holds you together. Even the arguments, even the fusses, all that kind of stuff. But that thing that, I remember we got back to church, and so this was Sunday. Wednesday night, Alyssa was in church. I think, or maybe there's next Sunday. Next service, she was there. She came and sat down. You could tell, God bless them, some of the ladies in that church, I think they felt like she was kind of like a China doll. They didn't know what to say or what to do. And she finally told them, she said, listen, ladies, I'm okay. I think they thought she was in denial or something. She's like, really, I'm all right. And God did some things through that in our lives that I can't even begin to explain the spiritual growth that he brought about through that horrible experience. I don't know what's going on in your life. And I don't know why God had me completely shift gears. Yeah, Todd, you guys come on up. But I know this, there are some things happening in your lives that maybe you feel like are going to crush you. And can I suggest that maybe God's using them to save you? And so I'm just going to give you this invitation. Whether you need to know more about how to be born again, or whether you just want to pray with someone, God's spoken to your heart this morning. Pastor Matt's going to be down here. If we need some more folks for you just to pray with or talk with, we'll get them down here. But I'm going to pray. And I just want you to stand and just come as the Lord speaks. If you want to come, just get at this altar and pray. Please do that. Father, right now, in Jesus' name, help us, Lord, to respond.